This is Christopher Walken, and you're listening to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast. Valuable fantasy football advice with some entertainment thrown in. Hey, Todd, it wouldn't kill you to play some competitive sports once in a while, would it?
Yes, time for some action. Time for some action. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast. I'm your host, George Banco. Took a day off for Memorial Day. We hope you guys had a nice, relaxing... I mean, it was beautiful down in Charlottesville, Virginia. Nice and sunny, and people were just relaxing, obviously paying tribute to the troops in whatever way they saw fit. So we hope you guys had a nice, relaxing day off. And we're back here on Tuesday, May 26, 2015. And Josh Mentz. Josh, how was your Memorial Day?
It was great. Hopefully everyone else got to enjoy their day off, and hopefully, most importantly, everyone was safe yesterday. And sure, it was nice to have a day off, but now it's time to get back into that grind.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the grind, we wanted to talk about some fantasy comeback guys, some guys that are probably doing some grinding on their own in this offseason to get back. Now, obviously, there's a lot of guys we can talk about who were injured last year, so we're going to get into some of those guys. Some of the main ones I had were especially at the tight end position, because there was a lot of tight ends last year who struggled compared to what they usually do. And then you also had, you know, a quarterback like Drew Brees, who by his standards actually had a down year, which is kind of crazy to think about. But we'll talk about those guys, and let's let you kick it off here and talk about one of the guys for fantasy purposes that you think is going to have a comeback season in 2015.
One guy that I looked at first was a guy that was normally ranked in the elite category. So a guy that you normally depend on as a wide receiver one, who kind of finished outside of it last year. And the guy who I not so much surprised about, but I think he will post better numbers this year, is AJ Green.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last year, he posted 69 catches for just over 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns, which the targets and receptions were his lowest since his rookie year, and his receiving yards were a career low. He missed time last year with the foot injury, which required surgery in the preseason, but now that he is fully recovered and without Cincinnati improving the wide receiver core, I have no reason to think that A.J. Green won't once again be a high-end wide receiver one in fantasy football.
Yeah, and he was also battling a concussion later on, like in late December, too. He just had a really banged-up year. And this is a guy, he's only 26 years old, you know, 6'4", 207. I mean, obviously, we all know how great he is athletically. I cannot see him not having, you know, a 1,000-yard season easily and just going up for, like, maybe 10, 12 touchdowns. The one concern with me, I mean, it's not really a big concern because I think they know how good A.J. Green is the coaching staff in Cincinnati, how they have been, you know, Hugh Jackson has been more of a run-oriented guy. Do you see that really playing into A.J. Green's stats at all?
Definitely. I mean, the emergence of Jeremy Hill along with Giovanni Bernard, Hugh Jackson's always been one that wants the two-headed monster out of his running backs. But when you have a guy who is as talented as A.J. Green is, you got to find ways to get him the football. And if you have a running game that requires attention and gives Green some more opportunities against single coverage and using his ability to go down the field and get or play above the ground, it might even help him, maybe instead of hurt him.
Yeah, absolutely. And also A.J. Green heading into the final year of his contract and, you know, still in talks with the GM there, talking about maybe an extension. And that's something that, you know, will definitely play a role. This season of his might actually be, you know, he might actually be thinking of that too as the season goes along. So it could be something that we see, just him really coming out and really performing at a high level this year. I agree with you. And I don't know what his ADP is currently, but I imagine it's probably not as high as you would expect it to be, and you would probably want to get him maybe.
He's going about the 22nd player taken right now in 12-team leagues. So at the end of the second round, maybe early third round, he's going right where around where Alshon Jeffrey and a guy like Randall Cobb is going. So
yeah,
if you're able to add a high-end running back and another wide receiver on the way back, I have no reason to think that AJ Green couldn't be a great three-headed monster for your top three picks if you're able to land him.
Absolutely. I think that's a steal, actually, at that spot.
Right. Yeah, especially when you got Alshon Jeffrey has to work into a new offense and has to deal with AJ Green's, or not AJ Green, Jay Cutler's inconsistency. I know Andy Dalton isn't the most consistent player in the world, but when you don't have any other weapons on the offense that really require an offensive game plan, then I have a hard time thinking that Green's production is going to drop that much.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about Jordan Cameron now, because he's a guy I was mentioning when I just said earlier about tight ends. The Browns didn't commit to him too much. They only offered him, you know, basically, they offered him a one-year deal. I mean, they say the 2016 portion of his contract is basically a mirage, according to the Miami Herald. So, definitely not committed to Jordan Cameron fully. Obviously, the injuries that he suffered in Cleveland, he had a boatload of them, and they're the kind of injuries that you get a little bit worried about because they're I think they're leg related, but. One of the things that Jordan Cameron does bring is Tannehill has never had a really legitimate tight end candidate in terms of receiving ability, and I think Jordan Cameron definitely brings that to the table. Now, I look at some of the guys. You look at like Charles Clay. Like let's talk a little bit about Clay when he was playing for Miami. Obviously, he was a pretty big red zone threat, and I think the Dolphins. Like really used him to their fullest ability. So let's take a look at
The difference between Cameron and Clay. With Cameron, you got a guy who hopefully can use his athletic ability to get up the seam and stretch defenses, where it will open up receiving lanes for guys like Jarvis Landry and Kenny Stills to use their speed and quickness on the underneath routes. So. Charles Clay, he was more of that H-back role or the move tight end where you keep him close to the line of scrimmage and don't really use them in a vertical role much. But the biggest thing with Cameron is his ability to stay on the field. He has talent and has shown that when you use him, he has a chance to be an impact player at the tight end position. But the concussion issues are really... where it lies.
Yeah, absolutely. That as well. And, I mean, Charles Clay finished with 58 receptions, 605 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I feel like Jordan Cameron, if he even plays half a season, because we all know how much of a disaster the quarterback situation was in Cleveland last year. I'm not saying Ryan Tannehill, you know, is an elite quarterback by any means, but he's definitely a step up from what...
Like
yeah, he is getting paid like it, exactly. So, I do think he's a step in the, you know, give him like maybe he's a borderline QB1 candidate in fantasy. And you don't have that in Cleveland with any of the quarterbacks currently. So I think there's a better chance that Jordan Cameron ends up, you know, easily scraping, you know, 700-800 yards and maybe 7 or 8 touchdowns. And I don't think that's out of the realm of the possibility. I don't think it's going to be too difficult for him to be productive in that offense, given their quarterback situation.
Yep, it's all about staying out of the field, and if he's able to, concussions are tricky because all it takes is one blow to the head, and you could miss a week, and you could miss the whole season with concussion symptoms. So it's all going to be how he responds to game activity. But being drafted at the back end of the seventh round, you're kind of getting into that. The range of tight ends where you kind of got to take a gamble. And with Cameron's ability to stretch defenses vertically and his ability to be a red zone target, he could be worth the gamble right there. But I do think you got to add another guy who you, a veteran who later who you can depend on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just kind of wonder, and I always have this theory, I don't know if it's true, that when a player is on a bad team and he's injured, he kind of just sandbags it a little bit and just decides not to really, you know, try to come back from his injury as much. And I don't know if Jordan Cameron did that in Cleveland, but I imagine he wasn't very happy playing there. So I think that was partially another reason why he, you know, was like, yeah.
Be happy when you see Josh Gordon getting suspended once a year and then seeing your first-round pick at quarterback go to rehab. And I mean, I have no reason. And then the whole coaching staff was a complete turnover last year. So I can see his frustration with the coaching staff and just the Browns organization in general. And hopefully the change of scenery can bring good things for his career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Who was your next comeback guy you had?
Brandon Marshall.
Nice.
Going to the Jets, it could be a little cause for concern just because he's not, you don't know that he has Jay Cutler getting tunnel vision 150 times a year. So he does have to battle with Geno Smith throwing him the ball. But right now, Brandon Marshall's being drafted at the start of the fifth round. And for a guy who, it was the first time in his career that he, well, since his rookie year, that he didn't have 1,000 yards. I think that Brandon Marshall's a guy that people could be overlooking in terms of redraft leagues.
Now, everybody's going to ask you this question when you say that. What is Geno Smith to you with those kind of weapons? Is he a better quarterback, or is he still Geno Smith from what we've seen of him so far?
I'm torn with Geno Smith. I mean, the guy, he has the ability to make all of the throws that you ask him to, but he can get careless, and he just makes a couple of these throws of games where you're like, what the heck are you doing? And it can hold an offense back, and you saw it a little bit last year with the Jets offense, but when you got a guy like Brandon Marshall who is as big and has the catch radius that he does, you don't necessarily have to be the most accurate or have the best ball placement from your quarterback. So he's definitely never had a wide receiver with the talent that Brandon Marshall has. So hopefully if they're able to work well together, it could bring good things for Geno in his career.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think
some of my doubts, I mean, Chan Gailey, looking at his stats, he's never been great with the passing game. But when you have Brandon Marshall and Derek Decker and Jeremy Curley and now Devin Smith, that's a pretty good wide receiver core. And Jason Morrow could be asked to play a bigger role in his second year, the tight end from Texas Tech. So the Jets have weapons, and it's going to be up to Geno Smith to get him the ball. But sitting at the start of the fifth round, and a guy who has been as consistent a fantasy football player as there's been over the last 5 years, I think Brandon Marshall is well worth the gamble.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have seen some people, though, that were saying that Chan Gailey, I mean, people kind of pin him as this, like, offensive chameleon in terms of the way he's able to adjust to his players and get the most out of them. But, I mean, people have to remember Ryan Fitzpatrick, he did have a stretch there where he was almost playing at a Pro Bowl level, but he fell back to earth pretty fast. And that's just one example. But I just want to let everybody know, and I'm not even comparing Geno Smith to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm just saying Chan Gailey, I don't think he's good. I mean, if Geno Smith's not a good quarterback, I don't think Chan Gailey is going to all of a sudden turn him around. I think Geno Smith has to really become just a more smarter player, and the coaching staff isn't going to just do this for him by drawing up certain plays. Geno's got to adjust.
Right. It's all about developing as a quarterback, and Geno's entering his third year. And it's up to him. This is the time where people want to see the progression, like we did with Ryan Tannehill last year. So
yeah,
if he wants to be even considered for one of the big contracts that could await him as a starting quarterback, it's going to be up to him to put the tools together and take the next step. So I'm interested to see how he does in preseason, and it's going to be a situation worth monitoring. But yep. Yeah, I thought it was pretty telling that they came out and just said that Geno will be the quarterback day one.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a good sign. All right, well, let's talk about Drew Brees and wrap this podcast up. Drew Brees for the New Orleans Saints, 36 years old now, one of the most prolific quarterbacks to ever play the game. And last year finished with 33 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 5 fumbles. I mean, he didn't have a terrible year. Obviously, the Saints, their defense really struggled at times, which is one of the big reasons why he had to throw the ball as much as he did. But the Saints also have slowly been trying to maneuver their way into becoming more of a run-oriented team. So what do you think of Drew Brees in 2015 because of that running style that the Saints seem to be trying to employ?
It's really weird that we consider 4,900 yards and 30 touchdown passes a down year for a quarterback.
Yeah, it's as low as since 2010. So it's,
I know, and he's seen his touchdown totals drop the last 3 years or 4 years, excuse me. But Drew Brees, you still got to think that he's going to put up at least 4,500 yards and 30 touchdown passes. I know they are definitely trying to switch to an offense that is predicated on a strong running game with the re-signing of Mark Ingram and bringing in Max Unger from Seattle to anchor that offensive line. So
yeah, no,
hopefully the running game can improve down there, but you still got to think that Sean Payton and Drew Brees have something planned up for the wide receivers and the passing offense.
Yeah, and here's where I get a little worried when I see the potential for Drew Brees to come back. The current wide receiver core, you have Marquise Colston, then you also have Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks, you know, had a really good rookie year before he got hurt, but he's also a little undersized, so you wonder if he could really, he's going to have to basically cement the number two receiver role in that offense. Last year, you know, he didn't really have to worry about that so much because, you know, the Saints had a mirage, they had a ton of weapons. They had Kenny Stills, they also had Jimmy Graham. They lost both of those guys in the offseason. So now they have Nick Toon and Josh Morgan. Josh Morgan, we know he's not anywhere close to a real consistent receiver. He's more of a blocker. Then you also have Nick Toon, who's kind of interesting, but we'll have to see, monitor him. But
and we got Josh Hill, don't forget.
Yes, that was my next guy. He's probably the biggest piece in this potential situation for Brees to become, just as good of a fantasy quarterback as he's been at an elite level. But I really don't see it. I know that offensive line has improved, which will probably help Drew Brees, probably get his interceptions down a little bit. But what they've done in the receiving game is just not as good as they have in years past. In terms of their roster talent-wise, it's just not as good as it's been in years past to me.
Yeah, but they've never really had that number one receiver. I know that they've had Jimmy Graham, and Marquise Colston was good when he was in the prime of his career, but I wouldn't say that Drew Brees has ever had that receiver where you say, I'm going to go to him, as far as a true wide receiver. So
yeah,
I like Brandon Cooks and what he can bring to an offense, and like we said, Josh Hill is going to be the guy that probably has the most to gain from a fantasy perspective. With Jimmy Graham gone and Sean Payton speaking so highly of him in the offseason about his potential. So there is definitely some cause for concern. Anytime you lose a weapon like Jimmy Graham and what he brings to an offense, it's going to hurt an offense. We saw it last year when Graham was out of the lineup with injuries that Brees kind of wasn't the same quarterback. So it's going to be up to him to adjust, and hopefully with a solidified offensive line and a strong running game, they can find a good complement.
That's my big worry, Josh, is the touchdowns with Drew Brees, because Jimmy Graham was his favorite red zone guy. And now you're putting in Josh Hill, who, you know, has drawn a lot of high praise from Sean Payton, which is definitely a good thing, but you don't know what's going to happen when he steps out on the field. And if he's going to, you know, not be the red zone, I don't think he can be the red zone. I mean, Jimmy Graham was one of the best red zone players in the league, if not the best, at the tight end position other than Gronkowski. So you don't have that anymore. So that I don't see how that doesn't eat into Drew Brees' touchdown totals.
Yeah, I mean, last year Jimmy Graham scored 10 touchdowns, and anytime you lose a 10 touchdown receiver out of your offense, you're never going to replace a guy like Jimmy Graham, and his ability to line up out wide and pretty much be a receiver is just crazy. And they're going to have to find a way to adjust. And Brandon Cooks, he can line up all over, and hopefully they can use him in more of a traditional wide receiver role this year, instead of trying to use him in that Darren Sproles jitterbug type role.
Yeah, I think that'll be C.J. Spiller will probably take over that role this year, or at least be something like it. And I didn't mention him, but yeah, he's probably a good candidate to be a really good PPR back in this offense.
But I think we could see this offense go to maybe not be the vertical game that we had seen with Graham and guys like Kenny Stills around, but when you got Marcus Colston, you got guys like Cooks and guys who can make plays after the catch. I think you could be seeing an offense that focuses on a shorter passing game.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, that wraps it up for Tuesday's podcast. We hope you guys got some value out of this. Catch us on iTunes, Twitter, Facebook. We're answering questions all the time. We really appreciate you guys listening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Helpers podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Now give me a big bowl of pie with some ice cream on it.